The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Little Red Rider here, Lunatic Fringe, a song that features prominently in a fantastic movie from the early 80s called Vision Quest. Graham right now, of course, in the middle of a wrestling season, loves that movie, which for those of you out there thinking I'm going to show it to my 12 or 13-year-old, you better sit right by there because Linda Fiorentino, she's not just there to walk around dressed and not kiss that dude and stuff. You got to have your finger on the fast forward button. And throw your hand over your kid's eyes. That's just how we do it. Nonetheless, George Brockle right back with you here for the final hour of the George Show before we turn it over to Chuck Kirk. Nationally, we've been having a conversation here about a couple different things related to Club Q, including the red flag law. And I just think that the media and the politicians that have rushed to decry law enforcement, I think they've just entirely missed the boat here. And it's because it feeds a political narrative. And again, no politician is going to waste a tragedy. This is going back to, what was his name? Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel. When he said, never pass up an opportunity to, holy parking lot, 225 southbound. Billy, look out there right now. I don't feel like anything's moving. Am I missing something? On southbound, it looks like it's at a dead standstill. Anyway, yeah, it's crazy out there. It's just, it's a parking lot. Yeah, Billy's looking at it. I don't see anything moving. I see a trillion cars stopped. So if you were thinking of getting onto 225 or you're on there now southbound north of Parker Road, get off the road because you ain't going anywhere. It's not moving at all, maybe an inch an hour or something. Nonetheless, politicians use these tragedies as a way to advance their political cause. Now, one of the clips I'm going to have Billy play is recently, and it's from Jason Crow, who was our 6th Congressional District Representative. He's been reelected again. He's a veteran. I got a ton of respect for Jason, even if we disagree on a whole bunch of fundamental things related to policy. And one of them, of course, would be in this area as well. But this is a guy that knows how to capitalize on the moment. But when you listen to the words that he's going to speak, think about the other law enforcement officials out there who he, I think, unintentionally, inadvertently is castigating here. Billy, play that sound, would you? Now, think about those words, and let me give you a couple of examples from his own party. Beth McCann, the district attorney in Denver, when she ran for office, said, "I will never, ever seek the death penalty." I don't recall Jason Crow or any other Democrat coming out to say, when a chief law enforcement officer refuses to enforce some laws, that is unacceptable. The candidate, the Democrat nominee who ran against John Kellner to replace me as DA when I was term limited, who almost won, I think she came within about 1,200 votes, said during a campaign, "I will never, ever, never prosecute a juvenile as an adult." Where was Jason Crow, who I think may have endorsed her, by the way? I don't know that for sure. I'm going to check. Where was Jason Crow to come out and say, it is unacceptable for a chief law enforcement officer to refuse to enforce some particular law? That's one part of this that pisses me off, the hypocrisy that exists here. But the bigger part is this. You and I both know who he's talking about. And he's talking about him the exact same way Tucker Carlson did, but in a just a different angle. And that is to once again blame law enforcement. And through his words to suggest that they were supposed to seek an extreme risk protection order, and that had they done it, it would have made us safer. We don't know at this moment if either of those things are true. We don't know if they should have or could have. We don't know if it would have been. We know none of this stuff. But never miss an opportunity if you're in the media or you're an elected official to try to capitalize on some tragedy, not to learn from it, not to figure out what we can do better, but to castigate and to blame and to disparage. And who do they pick? Their favorite punching bag since the post-George Floyd events. And that's law enforcement, to come after law enforcement. I need this case to be unsealed. I either want to be proven wrong or right or somewhere in between, but you need to know this too. And you know who else needs to know it? Tucker Carlson, Jason Crow, Governor Polis, the Attorney General, who has absolutely zero criminal justice experience but touts the reforms he's put in place for the police officer standards and training. That would be like me being put in charge of best practices for surgeons, right? Like, what? But something is going to grow out of this, and it better not grow out of it before we know the truth. You know, legislators are out there right now sharpening their pencils, trying to come up with some other way to mandate law enforcement do X, Y, or Z, because they're going to say that Club Q could have been prevented if only the police would have. We don't even know how this dude got a hold of the weapons he got, right? If he walked into a store and bought them, different conversation than if he obtained them illegally, right? The rush to condemn law enforcement, and it may turn out to be deserved, but the rush to do it in the absence of information says a lot about that particular person and where their heart is when it comes to the police and sheriffs and law enforcement. 303-696-1971. Bill, you're on 710. What do you think, Bill?
Good morning, George. Yeah, every time there's one of these incidents, and that's pretty frequently, we have this whole, rhetorical dance about red flag and, you know, the age of the of legal possession, the size of the, magazines. And what it all comes down to is we don't want to talk about the fact that gun access has been completely trivialized in this country. There was a big discussion the other day whether, like I said, I don't know where this guy got his gun either, but he either got it legally or illegally. But I'll tell you one thing for sure I do know. He got it trivially. He had no problem getting it, even if it was illegally. And that's the problem in this country. So no one wants to talk about
it. Now, when you say he got it trivially, what do you mean by that? I mean, we know he got it. We don't know what hoops he had to jump through to get it.
Right. What I mean is, if you want a gun in this country, stop you. It's not much harder than, breaking into a car and stealing something out of the glove box. I mean, it's just not much stopping you.
Or getting drugs.
If you want to get a gun. Yeah, I mean, but, at least drugs, you're not committing mass murder against innocent people.
So then what's the disrupting answer? Bill, what's the answer?
Well, the answer is to implement the Second Amendment the way it was originally written, a well-regulated militia being part of the equation. My question is, what militia did this guy belong to? How did he pass? Did he pass the training? Did he need remedial training? How did he come out of that well-regulated militia thinking that that behavior was acceptable? How come nobody else in his well-regulated militia noticed something?
Yeah, but Bill, the problem is you want to now redefine the Second Amendment in a way that the Supreme Court hasn't. And so when the Supreme Court under Heller says that it is a personal right, no different than the First Amendment, for you to possess a firearm, it has already weighed in on that language. And I know that there's a lot of gun control folks out there that want to say it's just about a militia. That just hasn't been borne out by the history, and certainly not by the court.
Use the right word there. The Supreme Court redefined the amendment. They basically took the words well-regulated militia and threw them in the garbage. They are there in plain English and always have been.
Yeah,
and all
what do
we
you
have
do with the
do
second part? What do you do with the second part that says the right to bear arms shall not be infringed? You've got to give that some
meaning. Collective
noun.
The militia is a collective noun. The people is a collective noun. It means a well-regulated group can keep and bear arms in the name of the state, with the power of the state. Okay, this group, he's not well-regulated.
So, Bill,
none of these people have ever been.
To play this out, then, you believe that there should be no individual right to possess firearms, and guns ought to be illegal except for the National Guard.
I believe that the Founding Fathers did not establish that right, and they can't. And
I'm just asking you what you think we ought to
illegal,
do to address this here. What would have stopped this, Bill?
I just told you.
Man, you're breaking up on me, buddy. I don't want to lose the language. You broke up on that last part. Can you restate it?
Okay. Yeah. Stop stop redefining the Second Amendment per Wayne LaPierre, implemented as it was specifically written by the founding fathers with the well-regulated militia in mind. Then if states want to allow individual gun ownership, that doesn't forbid that, but it certainly doesn't advocate it. It doesn't permit it for sure.
So, but practically speaking, so you want to overturn Supreme Court precedent Heller, and that could happen. You want to overturn Heller. You want to overturn any other case that provides some sort of protection for individual gun ownership. I get that. But then how do you enforce that? Are you talking about doing like door-to-door sweeps to get guns off the street? What are we doing?
No, I'm not talking about that at all. I'm first of all acknowledging that the state has the right to control this access, and the best way to do it, says the founding fathers. Okay, that's a state's right. That's a state's right.
If you look at the 10 amendments, specifically the first up until we get to 10, the first 9 are about individual rights. They're not about collective rights.
Mm-mm. Nope, the second one. Is collective, right? Well, militia is a collective now, George. Militia is.
I see militia in there. I get it, but there's a comma, and there is a phrase afterwards that has been given the same individual impact that 1 mm-hmm. through 9 have been given. Right? They're mm-hmm. not collective. Mm-hmm. Maybe even the 9th could be viewed as collective because it's the rights of the people. But I mean, how do you get to cruel and unusual punishment as a collective right? How do you get to the First Amendment as a collective right? Those are individual rights. Why in the world would they have plugged in as number 2 a collective right?
Okay, this has been well explained. You should have a professor named Carol Anderson on your show. She's written a book called The Second, and she can read this to you chapter and verse right out of the Articles of
Confederation. She can give me her interpretation. I could have Dave Copel on, and he would probably say the opposite.
Thank you. She can cite chapter and verse of the Articles of Confederation and the letters that went into the drafting of the Constitution and how that this was added as an afterthought to get the South to go along with the Union, okay, back in 1787. She can explain that to you chapter and verse. Off the top of her head, I'd have to.
I'll bet you Dave Copel could do the same from the Independence Institute and would come up with a different conclusion. But here's the bigger question.
Have them both on.
Yeah, we could
have them both on. That'd be great radio. Be great radio.
But maybe it would be great radio, man. But I think most of the people listening here aren't gun control advocates who see the Second Amendment as something that does not permit individual ownership of firearms. What you're saying is your solution to this would be to ban individual ownership of firearms. That's your answer.
It would be that would be an allowable solution. I'm not saying you would do it. And getting back to that, it's not a question of jackbooted thugs kicking down your bedroom door. It's a matter of stopping the sale to most of these
stopping the sale to
killings,
who? To me?
Well, the state would determine that, but yeah, likely to a lot of people.
Why?
Who right now can walk down to Walmart because they don't have a right to do it, and the state has a right to protect its citizens. But that's constitutional. But I'm saying most of these killings, George, are done with freshly procured guns and not some antiques that, your grandfather brought home from World War II. These are freshly procured guns.
Okay.
So if you stop it there, you're going to stop a lot of this access. Now you're still going to have other problems. You're going to have people making ghost guns. You're going to have people stealing guns. You're going to have like that guy in Connecticut who murdered his grandmother and took her gun. You're still going to have stuff like that.
By the way, I think it was mom.
Oh, his mom, yeah, and took her gun, which, by the way, may have been legal at that point.
And you're still going to have all the gang activity and all the violent criminals running around Denver
and Aurora. And there's no pun intended, there's no silver bullet. You're not going to solve everything with one fell stroke.
But you prevent my ability to defend myself and my family from someone who breaks into my house. That's okay.
I'm not preventing it. I'm saying the state has the right to decide how to deal with that. Right now, the Supreme Court has taken that away by redefining the Second Amendment. That's all I'm saying.
They don't take away governmental authority. Governmental authority is given to them. The way you phrase that is concerning, man. The government doesn't have the right to do anything. We give the government authority. What the Bill of Rights did was to say we withhold the granting of authority to the government for these things because we presuppose the existence of certain liberties that are unassailable, except in extreme circumstances. Isn't that right?
The Second Amendment gave the state the right to control this matter of gun access.
Absolutely
and
not.
The Supreme Court said
the Second Amendment didn't give anything. It protected a right that exists because you draw breath in this free land.
Yeah, A state's right. That's what I'm saying. We had this discussion already. A state's right, not an individual right. The Supreme Court completely asserted, which is what courts do and lawyers do. Mm-hmm. They assert, and then they try to make those assertions stand. The Supreme Court, by the act of asserting, makes it stand. When you go to court and assert something, George, you've got to get a jury to go along. You've got to get the judge to go along. You've got to, on appeal, you've got to get the appellant guy to go along. The Supreme Court doesn't have to get anybody to go along. They just assert something, and thus it is. And that's the way they do business, and that's what they did here.
But, buddy, it's not inconsistent with other jurisprudence. They didn't just invent this out of whole cloth. And it was Scalia who penned the Heller decision.
Yes.
And there have been cases since. Yeah, buddy, I disagree. That's just not the business of the originalist. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. I get that you disagree. But the answer to preventing this is not to redefine the Second Amendment or to go in and change it.
Then let me ask you this, George. What is the meaning of the words of a well-regulated militia? Why are they even in there? What is it supposed to mean?
Oh, I think back at
the time. Because we're acting as if it's not there.
Yeah, I think back at the time, the interest was to have an alternative answer to whatever the British government was and any other state government or federal government that might exist. It was to have that alternative. Yeah, for sure.
It was defined as a right of the states against the federal government. That's how it was written. But what does it mean today?
You want to convince me that we should overturn Supreme Court precedent, and I could get there, but it's not going to be by telling me that the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed means some collective right. You're just not going to convince me of that.
Okay, let me restate what you said. I want to convince you that the Supreme Court should not be redefining the very plain words of the founders that are in the Constitution, well-regulated militia. Those words are gone.
They're not gone.
Well, how did they apply in this? How did they apply in any of these cases? Like I said, what well-regulated militia was this guy a part of in any way, shape, or form? Yeah, this or any other guy?
That's not how the Supreme Court has ever interpreted that language. They just haven't. They haven't said that you have to be part of a militia. Nobody has said that the Second Amendment only applies to those people in a well-regulated militia. They've never required that. It doesn't mean
Why are those words there? What does it mean to have those words there? Why did they write those words?
Why are the words "the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed"? Why is that?
That's a codicil of defining well-regulated militia.
You and I can debate this all we want. It's not going to change what the law of the land is.
Okay. Why don't we amend the Constitution to take those three words out? Get them the hell out of there because it's just causing confusion.
It's more than three words, but. It's something that you and I aren't going to settle by saying, hey, the Supreme Court just has it wrong and that will cure this. It's also, I think, foolish to believe that somehow ending the lawful possession of firearms is somehow going to end the illegal use of firearms. That's just never going to happen.
There's no easy fix. I'm just saying you have to start with recognizing the reality of what the founding fathers said and how this behavior is not would not have been allowed by them, by their worldview. Okay? You start with that. Because right now, everybody says, you can't take guns away from individuals. So now, every time this happens, George, you have shows like you're having today.
You are in agreement with Dodd. You're in agreement, or Dobbs, that Roe versus Wade should have been overturned, and it was an abomination when it was put in. You agree with that?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
You think the founders believed there was a right to privacy that it would extend to abortion that was grown out of the language of the Constitution?
I don't know that. I can't change to that subject. I'm talking about this subject of the Second Amendment.
It is either precedent or it isn't. And if it should be overturned, it's going to have to be better than just I disagree with the emphasis they put on which part of which phrase in the Second Amendment. I just disagree with that, man. But I do like this. Bill, you had the guts to call in, and I like the conversation that we're having. Bill, thank you for your phone call. Bill's line is open, 303-696-1971. Here's something. Maybe this guy, it says, I left would like nothing more than to get rid of the Constitution. They can want all they want. The American people are entitled to be protected. They are entitled to protect themselves. Maybe this guy should see what China is doing to its own people. There's one I cannot read that just came in. Democrat liberals really do want to take your guns away. Absolutely correct. They do. They don't trust you. They don't trust you. And they don't trust me. And they would much rather have the state have a monopoly on the use of force 100% of the time. And by the way, you can just pick up the phone and call 911. You know they're going to show up well after the bodies are cold. I'm tired of people going after law-abiding citizens. Ditto. Fentanyl is mass murder. Well, it certainly led to numbers like that. But this idea that we're just, the Second Amendment's been interpreted wrong, we've just got to get back to interpreting it in a way that would allow, and by the way, I think the language there, I don't want to go too Freudian on this, but the idea that they took away the state's, you know, right the state doesn't have a right to do a damn thing, ever. We give the state authority. What the Bill of Rights was meant to do was to say there are things we will not allow the state to assail. Those are called fundamental rights. And it would just be weird to have the Second Amendment jammed in there amongst all these under individual rights and just say, but this one's collective. We think the second, and they prioritize things, folks. If you look at the history of the Constitution, it wasn't an accident that Article 1 is the legislature. The framers of the Constitution believe that the most powerful, most influential branch of government should be the one that represents the most amount of people and has the most diffuse authority. That is Congress. Hasn't turned out that way. Through a whole bunch of different things that has shifted largely to the executive. I believe that through a lot of this administrative garbage we've allowed to take place. But the idea that they prioritize things in a haphazard way, like, well, no, they meant the eighth was the most. That's not true. The very first thing they said was, and historically it makes sense, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom from establishment, all that stuff, peaceable assembly. That makes sense. Then the second one was a militia. I don't think so. I don't think so. That may have been part of their analysis, but the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. That's got to matter. And then we go to the third. The third isn't a collective right. That's your right to not have government troops forcibly in your home. The Fourth Amendment is for you to be free from the government engaging in unreasonable searches and seizures of your person. The fifth, you don't get subjected to custodial interrogation, even though those words do not appear in that amendment. They've been interpreted that way. It's you can't be forced to be a witness against yourself. That's you, individual. Sixth, your right to counsel and process. That's individual. Seventh, the right to a jury trial in civil cases. Individual. Eighth, freedom from cruel and unusual punishment. That's individual, not collective. And then you get to the ninth, and it's the right of the people. Uh-oh, maybe that's collective. And then the tenth, states' rights. I mean, come on, man. It doesn't make sense to jam a collective right right at the beginning of a whole bunch of individual rights. It doesn't make sense. Certainly doesn't to me. Turns out it doesn't so far to the Supreme Court. 303-696-1971. Callers are coming in. We've got texters coming in as well. We'll continue this topic when we come back. It's George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Are you going to go my way at 303-696-1971? Having a conversation with you right out there at 710 KNUS. We're going to start with Ben. Ben, you're on The George Show. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I think your last guest was making some fairly good points, but, you know, I think he's going a little bit too far, and it's not generally what I think gun control advocates are generally pushing for. They're looking for more reforms. But not necessarily, you know, full bans or anything like that. They just want.
What kind of reforms do you think they want? And Ben, what would you tolerate?
I would look for a national registry, and maybe a liability insurance.
Why
on
the
a
registry?
Firearm.
And you know that freaks out folks who are like, listen, man, if the government knows where all the guns are, they can come get them. That's the logic behind that.
Yeah, but that's not logical. That's ridiculous, kooky, crazy talk. The registry is basically just to make sure that, you know, you're not allowing straw purchases. You know, if you have to register it every single year, then a criminal, you know, can't necessarily just have his cousin go buy one. You know, and if you start seeing that where there's like a gang member or, you know, criminal organization and one person keeps buying guns that keep ending up in the hands of all these criminals, he's probably purchasing guns for that gang or organization. And it's just,
yeah, my guess is that would catch some. Ben, but my sense of it is, just having dabbled in this for a little bit, that most of the illegal guns are the ones that get handed around from person to person. No registry would stop that.
If you had to register it every single year.
No, not at all, because once it becomes illegal, ain't nobody going to register it. It just keeps getting passed around. You know what I mean? Like, usually they find these guns, and when they do the NIB and stuff, they've been used in multiple shootings by different people.
But penalize the person that doesn't have it registered anymore. If it's not reported or anything like that, if it's not reported as stolen or not registered again,
person. We've already passed a law in the state of Colorado that says if your gun gets stolen, you have an obligation within X number of days to report it to law enforcement or you can be prosecuted. We've already got that in place.
Good. I don't think Colorado is one of the states that's got like unsensible gun laws.
What's your,
you know,
what's your sense though of would any of that, would any law that you can think of that is conceivable in terms of being passed and enforced would have prevented Club Q or hell any of the other mass shootings that we've had here in the state of Colorado? Anything?
You know, I don't think Club Q would have been prevented. I don't know. Potentially. That one's kind of goofy. I think he probably should have been pulled in. Like, you know, when he got a felony arrest for this guy's trying to bomb his mom. You know, that should probably be something where.
Well, that's what she said.
This guy. Yeah, I haven't seen the police report. I guess you don't know either. No. We don't know because it's sealed. But
we need it to be unsealed. You'd agree with that. Like, we got to know what the hell happened here.
Yeah, but if that's something that came forward and is accurate and truthful, you know, if you're trying to bomb your parents, you probably shouldn't be able to get a gun, you know?
Maybe.
Right?
I don't know. You make a threat. What if he just makes a threat? They find no bomb-making materials, no efforts to get them. He's just so pissed off because his grandparents who raised him are moving out of the state that he says something that's just so emotional and nutty. Is that it then? Do we go, that's it? You had an emotional outburst.
I'd say if police are starting to get involved with that situation, it was probably serious enough to warrant the issue.
Yeah, but they're going to get involved. You can't not get involved. We heard Steve Reams from Weld County say that last week when he was on. But let's say that they do. They get involved. And listen, I don't like the video that he made. That one concerns me quite a bit. But let's say the police roll out. They do what they're supposed to do. Nobody gets hurt. They take the guy into custody. They take away all of his guns. They arrest him. They put him into the system. What could have been done differently? I mean, I don't understand yet, and we won't know till we know how he got the guns that he had. We just can't really point the finger anywhere and say, one, this was the failure, if there was one, and two, this is the fix, if there is one.
Yeah. You know, the issues that I see, generally, I'm not sure if 100% red flag laws are going to do a whole lot of stuff for preventing mass shootings. They're rare. You know, they're tragic when they happen, but where I do see a lot of benefits in those laws is, you know, suicidal
issues. I agree with you. I think that may be and that's probably where they've been used the most with I agree with you. That's it. But this idea that we're going to run to these as methods to prevent these criminal acts, these mass shootings, I don't see evidence of it. I don't see it yet.
No. Because, like, when a suicide happens, you know, generally men are more likely to use firearms. And when a firearm's used, it's around 85 to 90% effective. You know, if they use pills, if they try to do some other method, it's astronomically lower their ability to actually, you know, finish the deed.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, I think what we're trying to do, though, is to protect folks from harming themselves in this environment. I just think it's unusual. I'm not saying there's a perfect corollary here, but it's unusual that we have a law that protects someone's ability to have euthanasia. You know what I mean? We say, yep, if you want to end your life under these circumstances, we'll help you do it. But if you want to end your life by a handgun, we instantly conclude that we shouldn't let you do that. That's probably the product of mental illness, and we need to have a law that would intervene in between you and that method of death. That's just interesting to me that we've made that distinction.
Oh, you know, I think a lot of those people do need probably some psychiatric help, and
maybe.
I don't know. I think if you were going to do euthanasia, if you were actually going to try to instigate that, you'd probably have to go through counseling for a while, talk with somebody, and a lot of those people might be people that are in, you know, terminal conditions where they're...
Yeah, I think that's true. They have
Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
They have Alzheimer's, and they might die in, you know, 2 years anyway, and yeah, you don't want to go through necessarily all that stuff, whereas a lot of these people that commit suicide are 22 years old and... you know, depressed over a relationship breakup. And that's not something where, you know, maybe you probably should just get some counseling for something.
Didn't stop Romeo or Juliet. Ben, thank you for the phone call, man. Always a good way to get us kicked off. Ben's line is open, 303-696-1971. Here's a text from Jen. I'm writing to ask you to consider implementing the following gun sense ordinances in Lakewood. One, creating a 10-day waiting period for the sale of firearms. Why? Why 10 days? Why not a month? Why not a year? Why not one day? Why any time at all? It seems to me if you have a right to possess it and you're not displaying yourself as someone who seems agitated, emotional, or mentally unstable, why should your right to possess a firearm be time limited in that way. I don't know. And I don't know that there's any statistics that show that it makes any difference at all. I just don't know the answer. Here's one. Raising the minimum age to purchase and possess a firearm to 21 years old. We could have that conversation if you're also going to say that commensurate with that, your right to vote is also going to be increased to 21. Because if we can't trust the judgment of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds with firearms, how can we trust their judgment on who ought to be the governor of the state of Colorado? I don't get it. Requiring firearm dealers to post signage about the dangers of weapons in the home. Is that like a Surgeon General warning? We already have a law, Jen, and I think you know this, in the state of Colorado that requires safe storage of firearms under the penalty of potential prosecution. A lot of P's in there. That's quite an alliteration. But we already have that in place. I don't know that you need to have more signs that say, hey, smoking during pregnancy can lead to birth defects. If you're smoking during pregnancy, you're signing your kid up for something. But if you've got guns in the home and you don't know to safely storage them, you're a problem that isn't going to be fixed by a poster inside a store. Prohibiting the possession of unserialized ghost guns. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. That's a conversation I'd be willing to have, that one right there out of the others. The others, I just don't see how they're going to make a difference. The 10-day waiting period is one that is arbitrary, and it's grown out of this idea that all of these crimes are the product of some sort of an emotional thing. Remember that the guy from Aurora acquired those firearms over a 2.5-month period. He didn't get them 10 days before he went out to go commit his mass murder. In Columbine, they obtained those weapons many, many months before. In fact, they went out shooting at Rampart Range beforehand. There just isn't any, in my mind, I can't think of one of these that result. Maybe the dude out of Boulder. I just don't know when he acquired that, but it could have been 10 days. I just think that's a guess. It's arbitrary, and it's not worth the infringement on the rights. 303-696-1971. Phil, you're on 710 KNUS. Phil, what do you think? Hello, Phil. Phil from Arvada. You have me on mute because you're being stopped and frisked somewhere at TSA. Phil, we'll put you on hold, and then we'll come back. We're going to go to Austin. Austin, you're on 710 KNUS. Austin, what do you think?
Hey, I just wanted to talk about how the Second Amendment is interpreted and how there's a prefatory clause to the Second Amendment.
Okay.
And how Justice Scalia talked about this a lot, and the prefatory clause. Basically, when you read the Second Amendment, it says a well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, comma. And that comma can oftentimes be interpreted as and. So, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So there's the prefatory part of the regulated militia, and then the second part of the right of the people. And when he was talking about, I think it was in his Heller case.
Yeah, it was Heller.
Heller case, yes. Basically, when he talks about a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, you could also say it basically announces a purpose. So, in other words, you can rephrase that as saying because a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state. It's basically stating a purpose, but it's not stating the meaning of the operative clause of the second part of the Second Amendment.
So your sense of it is that Scalia got it right, and the interpretation that limits it to just the militia is not the correct reading.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah,
I agree with you. Let me ask you this while we're here, while you've called in, and thank you for that explanation. What law, if anything, that you can think of that has any reasonable chance of being passed and enforced would have stopped what happened at Club Q?
I don't know if there's a law that would have been passed to stop that. There's all sorts of laws. You can look at Denver, for example, how many gun laws there are in Denver. And when these gun laws aren't prosecuted, and there's we don't need more gun laws. More gun laws isn't going to solve the problem. There's enough gun laws on the books to actually enforce that would reduce gun crime exponentially versus what we're doing now.
I think there's some truth to that. Let me play the devil's advocate on the other side. One of the things that Denver would say is, well, because the other surrounding communities don't have the same gun laws. This is, by the way, what New York City argues. That they have these super strict gun laws, but because New Jersey and Connecticut and all these other states surrounding them just don't have the same laws, not as vigorously enforced, that's how guns spill into Manhattan and cause all this gun crime. I presume the same would be said of Chicago. So how would you respond to that?
I think I think that's tough. I think you're gonna run into that. You're going to run into that problem regardless. And sure, people are still going to be breaking laws and illegally bringing guns into other states. What you need to do is enforce the laws on the book. You go to Denver, for example, and I don't know how common knowledge this is, but Denver has passed a law where it makes it easier for individuals who have been convicted of felonies to possess guns. Previously, this is previous to 2022, felons in Denver could not possess a firearm. There has been legislation that was passed that allows a felon convicted of non-persons crimes to now possess guns. So this means drug dealers who have been convicted of drug offenses are now allowed to own guns.
Car thieves, rioters. They passed a law making a whole ton of convicted felons eligible to possess firearms, ignorant of the statistics that show that many of these lower level, quote unquote, lower level property crimes are committed by people who are at much higher risk to be violent than other people who were convicted of lower level misdemeanor domestic violence crimes.
Yeah, exactly. And if you really want to make a difference in this gun violence, enforce the laws that are already on the books. Keep criminals from possessing guns. Don't make it easier for people who are convicted of felonies to possess guns. It's
hypocritical. We're going to relook at red flag to go after law enforcement for not trying to take guns away from this guy who may have had two other orders preventing him from doing it. But we turn around and say, Oh yeah. This is the attorney general talking. Convicted drug dealers, why shouldn't they be allowed to go hunting? Like, oh my God, you just invoked hunting. I mean, are you kidding?
It's extremely problematic, and I've seen it firsthand in Denver specifically. You have drug dealers, people who are moving fentanyl across the state, across the city, that have been convicted of it before, and now that law passes, and they're legally possessing guns now. They're legally possessing guns. So you have bad people, you have criminals, you have drug dealers that are now doing their illegal activity, and they're legally possessing a gun. It's very problematic.
Man, I thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. Let me cut away for a quick break. Before I do that, though, let me tell you about our good friend Gabe Ribble at Ribble Empower Home Team at Keller Williams Realty DTC. Nobody better in this market or any other, as challenging as this one seems to be. And I got to tell you, I've read so many articles that freak me out about making a decision one way or the other. It's hard to know what to do. But she does. And she does because she's been in the market for decades. You call her at 833-301-SOLD. Yep, the last four sold. 833-301-SOLD. Or check her out at gayhasthebuyers.com, G-A-Y-E, because she does. She'll do that thing that you want everybody you do business with to do, but won't. And that is to give you a guarantee in writing that she will sell your house at a certain price point at a certain time. She'll do it. She is the person that will bring to you the peace of mind and create as stress-free an environment as she can to help get your house sold. Give her a call at 833-301-SOLD, gayhasthebuyers.com. When we come back, any other text, phone calls in, and we'll wrap this thing up. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you on 710 KNUS. Can I tell you something special you can do this holiday season? And I'm going to tell you about two things. One you can do for yourself. That's a little bit later, and a loved one. This one is for the broader community and a stranger, and that is to go to Step Denver on Colorado Gives Day. That's coming up December the 6th. That is closer than you might think. As you know from our conversations before, Step Denver, which you can reach at stepdenver.org, but you can also help them out at coloradogives.org/stepdenver. coloradogives.org/stepdenver. Here's why you want to go help them out. This is that group that goes out there and saves men's lives. No joke. Not like EMT, but like takes addicts and the homeless and gives them, with the right motivation, man, the purpose and the long-term commitment to making themselves functioning members of society, taxpaying members of society, saves their souls. But they do it without taxpayer money. There's only a couple ways they can do it. One is for you, as you know, to donate your truck, your car, all that stuff, and they get you maximum value for it. But the other thing is, on Colorado Gives Day, you got a couple extra bucks in your pocket, go out to coloradogives.org/stepdenver and feel good about the fact that your money is going to save a life. Not to provide some temporary shelter, not to provide a cup of soup. All those things all have to save a life. Go to stepdenver.org or check them out at coloradogives.org/stepdenver. Now, this topic is not going to go anywhere. Someday, and I hope it's someday soon, we are going to be told what happened with this bomb threat that mom called in with the guns and the scary video. By the way, if you have not had a chance to go out and do two things, you need to do it today. Go out there and Google Club Q shooter, and KDVR has this video, airport, stuff like that. And there's some disturbing stuff. I mean, the interaction between the people videoing them and these people clearly have some decorum slash anger issues to deal with. And it's worth going out and checking that out. The other thing to do, pretty please, with information and reality on top, is go to thegazette.com. Denver, Colorado Springs, doesn't matter. Colorado politics, go out there and find the column that just went up this morning. Read it. Shoot it around to others, post it on social media, because I got to tell you, there's a reckoning coming here is my guess. And it's either going to be me eating a whole lot of crow, or it's going to be a bunch of members of the media and politicians who are out there pointing the finger at law enforcement saying failure, failure, failure. And that includes Tucker Carlson, by the way, that are going to owe these people an apology. And they're going to, I just don't know if we're going to see them do it or if they're going to try to explain away what they've done. But definitely go out there, read it, shoot it around, and let's get that conversation going. I'm willing to call out law enforcement when they fail, but by God, that's got to be proven to me that they fail. I'm not going to start from presuming that. And that's what it looks like has happened here, all the way from media to the governor and maybe even the president. I don't know yet. We'll have to check on that. Hey, listen, as we wrap up, I do want to tell you about one other thing I told you that you could do for someone that you love, someone special during the holiday season here, and that is Littleton Jewelry. Now, you can go find them at littletonfinejewelry.com. Here's what I want you to look at. Yes, the watch repair, they fix mine. Yes, the buying, the selling of the coins and the gold and the silver and the jewelry and the cleaning up and fixing all your... Yes, yes, yes. That's all good stuff. But the stuff that you can do that makes the most immediate and long-term impact is that custom jewelry that they have spent a great deal of time, effort, and resources in developing and expertise in. They've got folks there that, like the big stores in the malls, they want to hire them away to do. They won't leave even for more money. That tells you something about Jesse and his team of locally grown folks out there. They're not just invested in customer service. They're invested in a great work environment and family environment as well. Every time I've been in there, people walk in, they know them by first name. Every time I've been in there, I hear, oh, yeah, we listen to 710 KNUS2. Be part of an organization, a company, a small business that you can support that will produce for you and a loved one that heirloom quality legacy piece of jewelry that'll just get handed down time in and time out. Easy to find them just south of Hudson Gardens on the west side of Santa Fe. Just turn right after the jewelry repair sign or go check them out at littletonfinejewelry.com. That's littletonfinejewelry.com. Now listen, we're going to be back tomorrow with more stuff. There are things we didn't get to today, including stuff about, oh, I don't know, dinner guests for President Trump, about a certain senatorial candidate who's declared that he's actually a resident of a different state, and all the other things that may develop out of Club Q. We're going to do that tomorrow. We'll have guests lined up for you to the extent that I can get some of these long. I'd love to get victims on, by the way. If you know victims down there in the Club Q thing, I just want to have a conversation about them, about what happened. And my understanding is they're willing to talk, and I think that's great for everyone involved. Don't lose sight of that. They're the most important part of this, are the Club Q victims. We'll be back tomorrow, Billy and I will, from 6 to 10 a.m. as we will every day this week, and I think in the weeks coming, unless the FCC pulls the plug on us. Stick around for Charlie Kirk, then Deb at 3, Stefan at 4. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.